Hey guys, welcome to Transistor Radio. And today we're gonna have a chip chat about semiconductors. And it's Doug from Fabricated Knowledge, Dylan from Semi Analysis, and we have a special guest today, John from Asianometry. If you're not familiar with John, he probably is the best semiconductor YouTuber in the game, in my opinion. His information
No one is not familiar with him. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Yeah, if anything, yeah, actually Uno card or reverse Uno card. They don't know who we are. Okay, that's fair. Actually, we don't need to. I was just being nice, okay? It's really funny how that goes inverse. Oh man. But today we're gonna talk about the TSMC earnings that just happened this Thursday. Both Dylan and I have written up a little bit about it, and John is on the show because he's like, "Hey, you want to talk?" Well, he was like, "Hey, you're gonna make an earning. You're gonna make an episode about it," and we're like, "Dude, come on the show. Let's talk about it." So I'm gonna actually give it to John to ask questions, and we'll just kind of start from there.
Thanks. Glad to be on, and thanks for inviting me. It's kind of unexpected but exciting. I've been listening to Transistor Radio forever. You know, when the TSMC earnings came out, the first thing I noticed was that kind of revenues are down. The mix is kind of really interesting here. What does that really kind of say about the state of the semiconductor economy right now? Like, is there some sort of, are we seeing a recovery? Do we not see recovery? Like, what do you think?
So their earnings are super interesting because they're the heart of the industry, right? And so their earnings are really the pulse of it. And for me, right, the earnings, you know, the negativity there is interesting, but, you know, more important is sort of what TSMC is saying around what's going to happen in the year. So last quarter they guided to, you know, hey, they're down just low single digit percentages year on year. And now they're saying they're going to be down mid to low single digits year on year in terms of revenue. So that means incrementally the entire year has gotten worse. And furthermore, right, the current quarter was at the low end of their rate estimate in terms of guidance. And then Q2, the guidance was really low, right? Like, so when you talk about like the, you know, quarterly earnings across the year, you know, Q1 looks like, you know, it was 15.6 billion or so, 16.7 billion. Q2 is going to be something like 15.6 billion based on the middle of what TSMC is saying. So that's a humongous decrease year on year, right? And what does that say? Obviously, it's, you know, hey, this is bad for the semiconductor industry. But, you know, instead of, you know, focusing on, you know, the current, everyone likes to focus on what's going to happen sooner rather than, you know, just what's going on right now, which is, you know, obviously negative. And if you try and imply, you know, what they say about the year and just track through the quarters, then the end of the year, they're going to be setting new records again already, right? You know, with the ramp of 3 nanometer and, you know, all that and 5 nanometer continuing to grow, they're going to be setting new records for revenue. So that's, you know, exciting for the industry that they think it's going to rebound like this so heavily.
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about it. I mean, part of the thing. So yeah, negative year over year, negative quarter over quarter, the first time we've actually seen the slowdown impact TSMC. So if you look at a one-year chart, like the stock market was expecting this. And frankly, it was really interesting. Like November last year, TSMC was growing 40, 50% revenue year over year. And the stock was just going down and down and down. Now we finally see why the stock went down is because this was kind of expected. The thing that I think is really interesting is TSMC guides a little weird. They kind of just say, hey, this is what we see next quarter. And if it gets worse, it gets worse. If it gets better, it gets better. I don't think they really... Like they think they're going to be able to grow down mid single digits. So that implies a second half recovery. Almost every company that talks about semiconductors right now will tell you there's going to be a huge recovery in the second half. I think there's a lot of things that are kind of relying on that. One, we don't go into a giant, terrible global recession that is worse than it already is. And then two, I think China is a big question mark in the back half. They said China is not coming back as strong as they thought. So I think that this is like this is a pretty typical semiconductor industry downturn. The typical timing is at least two quarters. So let's say Q1, Q2, that's it. Boom. If you had Q3, I think Q3 will still be down year over year. And assuming the second half is really going to ramp, it's going to be that Q4 end of 2023, where we start to see, hey, we're through it. We're back to all-time highs. Things are great. I don't really know what what's going to happen. And I don't think anyone really does, but I think the thing that's really interesting to me is that TSMC is saying the entire industry is going to be down mid-single digits. We're going to be down low single digits. Like that's my favorite thing every single time is like, no matter what happens in the semiconductor industry, no matter what happens in the foundry industry, TSMC will do better. That's something I really do believe in. Like they're the best in the world. They're always going to do a little better than everyone else. So, yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Dylan, you wrote a little bit about utilization rates, and the utilization rates seem to be the something that really caught out to me is that not just the utilization rates on 7-nanometer, because that was something that happened last quarter, but now we're starting to see kind of the trailing nodes starting to be a little bit affected too. I'm not sure. I don't remember that last quarter. Like, what do you think that sort of kind of indicates here?
Yeah. So, 7-nanometer was the only one last quarter that was, you know, underutilized. I thought it was about 83% utilization in Q4. And then, you know, the trailing edge nodes, they seem to be still fully utilized. Maybe 16-nanometer was under 100, but everything else, you know, seemed like it was at 100%. You know, looking forward to Q1, 7-nanometer is below 70%, which is like just wow. And the guidance, you know, using the guidance and a bit of a, you know, I like to call it monkey math. You know, it looks like 7-nanometer will be below 60% utilization in Q2, but that's not the only node, right? You know, 16-nanometer fell below 90% in Q1, and again, with some monkey math, it could be at like 75% in Q2, and even 5-nanometer hit 88% in Q1. Looks like it'll hit maybe like 88% in Q2, you know, based on the estimate. But the trailing edge nodes were the interesting one, right? You can't tell so much, right, based on, you know, just the presentation material, because all they do is give you a percentage. But once they release the full earnings, they'll give you the exact revenue number by node. And so then we can actually get a better, you know, more precision to these numbers. But the sort of theory behind it is, right, like, hey, you have X percent per node, right? So if you have 17% in this process node, and you had 16% last quarter, but last quarter you had $20 billion of revenue, and this quarter you only have $17 billion of revenue, then that 16% is a smaller revenue number, right? So either that's lower ASPs, lower prices per wafer, average sales price, or that's lower utilization rates, right? You're not shipping as many wafers. And no one is really getting wafer price discounts quite yet. You know, discounts haven't really ramped up yet. So TSMC is trying to hold firm on pricing, given all the inflationary environment and how power prices keep going up and so on and so forth. So instead, you know, it looks like TSMC is just letting utilization rates fall, which is fine, probably the better strategy than cutting price. So on the trailing edge nodes, you know, beyond 16-nanometer, it does seem like they're going to have to, I mean, there's no other way that, you know, they have to free up capacity somewhat in Q2, right? I mean, you're going down another $1 billion in revenue, right? Unless like 7-nanometer is like below 50%, those nodes need to start freeing up. And, you know, TSMC even mentioned they're starting to see some weakness in automotive in the earnings. So they canceled their 28-nanometer fab in Taiwan, right? So this is all pointing to, hey, the trailing edge is not, you know, 100% utilized anymore, and it doesn't make sense to keep expanding 28-nanometer. And you know, automotive weakness indicates that those, you know, 28-nanometer and above process nodes might start to be underutilized. Now we'll have to wait for the release of, you know, by node revenue with dollar figures or with with Taiwanese dollar figures, because with the percentages, there's imprecision, right? The significant figures, right? It's just 1%, 2%, 3%. So the error bar is like a few hundred million dollars, which is a lot with regards to, you know, hey, 250 nanometer or 0.25 micron, whatever node.
Interesting. And then, like, Doug, when you're talking a little bit about some kind of the big, what, like something that Dylan mentioned just now, and I think that kind of you wrote a little bit about too, is kind of the automotive, right? Like you seem to be thinking something's going on with automotive here, right? And maybe TSMC showing some growth here, but you wrote that you think there's going to be a bit of a glut. Like, what do you mean about that?
Okay, so it's probably one of the most interesting aspects of COVID in the United States and even globally is that automotive production never really came back, right? Like after 2019, global SAAR, like which is like seasonally adjusted, whatever annual adjusted revenue, went down and has never come back to the pre-COVID levels. Part of that is that automotive companies have been prioritizing higher end cars with more semiconductors and higher gross margins. Now, what's kind of happening is there, and then this entire time, their inventories went up and they're like, we don't have enough semiconductors. But there's a little bit of normalization finally happening. And I think the thing that is like kind of telling to me is that at least the automotive retailers in the United States, their inventory days are starting to increase. And Tesla, which is the iconic EV maker, right? Like they really own the EV market, is cutting price like mad. And their inventories are increasing. So let's just pretend this wasn't a car, like, and we didn't know what we know about cars and the car cycle this in 2020, 2021, 2022. If the end market is increasing revenue, cutting price and trying to move, their inventories are increasing, they're cutting price to try to sell their widgets. That to me sounds like overproduction. And this is also coming at the same time there's economic weakness globally. So let's say in Q3, Q4, the United States and Europe and Asia just doesn't manage to sell as much cars because the economic weakness is so bad. And in the United States particularly, let's say that's mostly driven by higher interest rates. This will then all of a sudden you have way too much inventory on hand. And I think that that's kind of like, that's like the traditional inventory over inventory cycle that happens in all semiconductor end markets. And automotive this entire time hasn't seen it happen once. Essentially, they've sequentially grown automotive almost since the pandemic began until now. That story was mostly driven by higher content increases, and it's finally time for that shoe to drop. Like, I don't think it's going to be like draconian, like, oh my God, they're giving away these cars for free. But the automotive market has been consistently tight. The trailing edge market has been consistently tight this entire time. And that kind of the cancellation of 28 nanometer to me kind of smell, because one of the reasons why the trailing edges were so tight for so long was because that was where most of the automotive production was being used. And so all these new cars coming out with trailing edge demand, and then there just wasn't enough supply to meet it. Now they're starting to pull back supply against that. And I think that what that means is the demand is starting to crack on the automotive semiconductor side. I think it's a little early, but like just relative. And so like, remember, my space is mostly about the finance and like thinking about the things in the big picture. The most unscathed market in all semiconductors and has been for years now has been automotive and industrial as well. And in industrial, we're already, and that's also part of it. Automotive, industrial, kind of like twin markets for the really big guys. Industrial, we're already starting to see cracks. And last quarter, some companies were like, oh, some of our industrial customers are starting to order less. So I think that all of this is kind of, there's just been like this, this like first in, first out cycle of semiconductors. Like, let's just go through, let's say starting in 2022, where it first happened. Crypto GPUs was the first, okay? Crypto GPUs, and then handsets like phones. At some point, let's say Q2, Q3, it started to become PCs, and PCs drag down memory. Now Q1, we don't really see weakness in the data center, but we're starting to see weakness in networking. And now I think it's time to roll all the way forward into automotive and industrial, which is the place where has been the strongest up until now. And then on the other side of that, the companies that are going to get first out is GPUs. NVIDIA has already started to see the gaming GPU cycle starting to be better. Then it's going to be PCs, then it's going to be handsets, and eventually memory. And then while that's happening, let's say in the second half of this year, automotive and industrial will probably be falling off. So that's just like, I'm not certain this is going to happen, but this is kind of the thing that I think is really interesting is that we're starting to finally see weakness in the place that we've seen zero weakness for years now. So that's kind of what I was really focused on this quarter that I thought was really interesting. That and the CoWoS comment. I don't know, Dylan, if you want to talk about that, but I thought that was really interesting because meanwhile, they're talking about automotive getting worse, PCs bad. And then there's like, this tiny little segment within TSMC. They're like, oh, by the way, it's getting much better. So Dylan, you want to talk about the CoWoS segment within TSMC?
Yeah, sure. So just quickly on the automotive side, right? Just to just to be, you know, I love to riff on the customers in that space a little bit, because you know, they complained about capacity all the whole time. Yes, it was because they needed a whole lot more chips, but it's also partially because they cut all their orders. And, you know, as COVID happened, like they do every recession, and, you know, other customers picked up the slack, right? Like, yeah, automotive is a lot of trailing edge, but, you know, a monitor has some trailing edge content, right? You know, a gaming headset or a microphone has some trailing edge content. All these, you know, PCs have trailing edge content too. Like all of these things have trailing edge content. And those ripped. And so those took up all the slack in the orders. And then when the automotives came back for a supply, they were like, can I have a crumb of supply, sir? And it's like, no, we already sold it to someone else who's, you know, a much better customer and is just not going to cut. So sorry. You know, so that was also part of it. And so, you know, you see today, like automotive up 50% year on year. Part of that is like, you know, in Q1, part of that is like, dude, 50% year on year is not possible, not sustainable, right? Like, you know, this, you know, automotive content is growing, like semiconductor content, you know, more screens, more self-driving, more, you know, features, this and that, but it's not up 50% year on year, dude. Like that's ridiculous. So there is a bit of, you know, overstocking that's clearly happening. And so at some point that's, you know, the mix of cars has to shift to low end as the economy's weakened globally. You know, people do have to, you know, can't afford as many expensive cars, right? You know, you already see, you know, as you pointed out, Tesla's cutting price and the Chinese automotive company is selling like an $18,000 car, which I don't know, John, by the way, do you have an episode on that company? Didi or is it Geely?
That would be awesome. BYD, right?
BYD. Yeah, BYD, the rise. I mean, they have a fab, right? Like that's super cool.
That's a very interesting company. I've been wanting to do a video for a very long time about like the coming Chinese EV boom, export.
I don't know if you've looked at monthly export data, but Chinese auto exports are freaking soaring, right? And it's coincided with EV. So like that would be a super cool episode, you know, if we could, I think
it'll be very interesting. It would be very interesting. I've spoken to some policymakers about this in Europe, and I think they're very not sure about what to do about it, because a lot of these Chinese EV exports are going to hit Europe, and they don't really know, not like they don't really know, but they feel the dilemma of it. Yeah. It'll be very interesting. I'm working on it. You're ahead of me here. I'm working on it.
Yeah. Fair enough. BYD is a fab, so they're super cool. Sorry for the tangent.
No, they're monsters. People should be scared. People, if you work in the legacy, like, automotive industry, you should be very afraid.
I saw the $11,000 car and I was like, gee, how do you freaking compete with that? Like, and you know, there's just a lot of different a lot of really impressive things. And also like the EV boom, right? On the semiconductor side, all the customers for all these EV cars have been the semiconductor have been these Chinese OEMs from that have been kind of discounted, I think, that people don't think is real businesses. The $11,000 BYD car has to be like a shot across the bow, be like, oh my God, there's going to be this huge EV boom. All these semiconductors are selling into the Chinese, these Chinese companies is really money good, if that makes sense. And you should be taking them very seriously. Because I want to say up until very recently, at least, and this is American-centric investor view, haven't taken it seriously at all. And I think that it's hard not to if you're selling that cheap of a car. So Tesla has to do price cuts and people have to really get their stuff together. It's ended up being an automotive industry instead of TSMC.
Yeah. So to transition back to the question you're asking, right, about TSMC, right? So the negative side, we talked a little bit about utilization rates and automotive maybe starting to crack. The side of the business that's accelerating, of course, is you know, AI and large language models. And, you know, interestingly enough, TSMC was, you know, they weren't so like, oh yeah, large language models, we're seeing a huge demand influx for this. Like, even though it's obviously they are, you know, they weren't like talking about it to the moon, like some companies are, which is interesting because they're just like conservative in general, because they are seeing huge orders for it, right? I mean, they manufacture the chips for Google's TPU through Broadcom. They manufacture NVIDIA's chips. They manufacture Amazon's Trainium. They're going to manufacture Microsoft's new AI chip that's on 5 nanometer. We'll see how much they ramp that. They manufacture AMD's, you know, chips, right? They manufacture everyone's chips who's in the AI boom, and everyone's, you know, especially NVIDIA and Google are soaring in orders. You know, so they manufacture all these chips, and all of these, you know, AI training and now large language model type inference chips, which tend to just be training chips, because the demands of them, they require high bandwidth memory, right? Which is 3D stack memory from Micron or from SK Hynix and Samsung primarily, and Micron's trying to get in now. But to integrate that 3D stack memory with an advanced, say, 5-nanometer processor chip, right? You do this thing called 2.5D. And, you know, you tend to use something called a silicon interposer, which is just a piece of silicon that just has wires in it, right? Connecting the HBM memory to the chip. And so TSMC not only manufactures the chip now with, you know, these high bandwidth memories, they also integrate that high bandwidth memory on a silicon interposer, which is just a bunch of wires effectively, right? Connecting the high bandwidth memory to the processor. So they do that packaging step in-house too. And with that,
they is that like a high end service that they provide? Like, because it's not necessarily, I mean, because there are other OSATs in Taiwan and the rest of the industry, right? Is TSMC kind of like muscling in on their sort of space?
Yeah, to some extent, although there is a bit of a collaboration with them as well. You know, TSMC started with 2.5D in like 2015. At the time, you know, ASE had a little bit of experience with 2.5D, but it really was an emerging field. In the same vein, right, around that same time frame, TSMC did, you know, fan outs for Apple, started doing fan out packaging for Apple, which was, you know, not 2.5D, but it was another, you know, advanced form of packaging. And well, you know, again, ASE and Amkor had shown off some of this before. It just kind of makes more sense for, you know, the company manufacturing the wafers to kind of integrate that together. And so nowadays, you know, MediaTek and Apple both do that packaging with TSMC on the mobile, you know, fan out side. And that's mostly chasing, you know, density and Z height and things like that, right? And then on the high end, right, they're doing chip on wafer on silicon, which is sort of like 2.5D, but that you know, then evolves into all these 3D technologies. And so, yeah, they're muscling in a bit on OSAT's business, and they want to take the high margin packaging out, right? And they want to do it themselves. Generally, packaging has been lower margin, so why would you want to chase that business? And it's very competitive. So with that said, TSMC also does collaborate with some of the local packaging companies, right? They'll put the chip on the silicon interposer, but then you still have to put that silicon interposer with the chips and memory onto a substrate. And so they'll collaborate with some of the local vendors to do that step, right? Putting it on the general substrate and testing it and so on and so forth. Again, right? They'll do that with those customers. So they don't do everything in house, but they do offer the full suite of services. And so that is really soaring for TSMC, because all these AI processors specifically, right, AI and HPC require high bandwidth memory, and those require these silicon interposers. There's different ways to integrate it, you know, but that don't require a silicon interposer, but by and large, it's using a silicon interposer. And so TSMC mentioned they got a huge order for it 2 days ago, right? And so it could be any one of these companies. It could be NVIDIA, but I imagine NVIDIA has just been ordering more and more and more continuously. I imagine this, you know, huge order 2 days, the last 2 days was probably, could be related to Google, right? Like Google just restructured DeepMind into Google and Google Brain together, right? So those are research together. So it could be Google, right? They're like, oh, hey, okay, now that we've merged these teams, let's order a shitload more TPUs. Right. Or could be, you know, Amazon, like, oh, God, we need to install more Trainium because NVIDIA is not giving us enough GPUs because we don't want to support their cloud and we don't want to install their networking. So they're going to sell all the GPUs they have to other people before they sell them to us. So we need something, you know, deploy our Trainium as much as we can, even though, you know, we don't have much demand for it. Or it could be, you know, Microsoft with their new chip. Hey, chips working now. Let's order some. Right. Let's order some more. Could be AMD, like, hey, we just landed, you know, Microsoft or Meta or someone else, right, for MI300 to use for, you know, AI, right? You know, we've got the supercomputing contracts. We already had those orders in, but we're just waiting on, you know, one of these big guys to pull the trigger on an order. They've got some evaluation units right now. And so, yeah, let's put a huge order in. Could be any of these companies putting a huge order in.
The thing that's also really interesting is this happening at the same time as AdvanTest is saying, by the way, HPC orders for LLMs rolling in like crazy. So there's clearly something going on, and it's like, it's just very interesting.
Doug, who's AdvanTest?
Oh, AdvanTest is the Japanese testing company that competes with Teradyne. So there's two big testing companies. Teradyne is mostly Apple-centric and does iPhones, and AdvanTest is the Japanese company that does mostly HPC and like the HPC kind of high-end units in the data center. So anyways, AdvanTest did this conference, like did this media thing where they're like, by the way, testing demand for these LLMs rolling in. It's you know, it's coming in super hot. And then you look at the actual results at TSMC and you see HPC's down like 20% or something quarter over quarter. And you're like, really interesting. And so it's like one of the things that I think is probably the most interesting and like big incremental markets that everyone is focused on is the large language model training inference chips that are coming online. But the thing is, right now, it looks like it doesn't round to anything. Like, it's still just an infinitesimally small part of the big pie. I think in the coming quarters, that's going to grow and grow and grow and grow. And all of a sudden, we're going to look up and be like, oh, LLMs as a percentage of the total compute is going to end up being like, you know, mid-single digits or something by in like a year or two, or maybe 2 or 3 years. Like, let's be a little bit more conservative. So there's this like kind of in the midst of the downturn, in the depths of TSMC's first really bad quarter in a while, there is a huge green shoot, a huge ginormous green shoot that everyone is like, by the way, and TSMC obviously is like, hey, here is how it impacts us. CoWoS is clearly the type of customer that is ordering this. And I think that's really, I don't know, very bullish, if that makes sense. TSMC will always win as long as semiconductors are being made. So, I just want to make sure we answered all the TSMC earnings questions because I feel like this has become, it always ends at LLMs right now, if that makes sense. But like, seriously, every conversation I have eventually ends up in LLMs in semiconductors right now. But I just, I don't know, because it is a big deal. So.
Is it
the one thing we didn't?
Is it real?
3 nanometer. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I didn't ask about we haven't asked about 3 nanometer yet.
I think it's real, but let's talk about 3 nanometer.
Yeah, let's talk about 3 nanometer. So what's going on with N3? They had this random ceremony at last day of the year in 2022, and hearing news that the next MacBooks, next MacBooks are going to have M2s, no M3s. So what's going on with N3?
Let me paint a picture for you, right? In 2017, Intel had already delayed, you know, their 10 nanometer multiple times, right? Out of 2015 and 2016, as they had in prior roadmaps. And in 2017, the end of the year, they said, hey, we're shipping 10 nanometer for revenue now. And then you didn't see any 10 nanometer laptops for a while. Quite some time, and then you saw some random, you know, crappy one. You know, they continued to ship the 14 nanometer ones, the chips, and then randomly you saw like a few like really like crappy chips out there in the wild called Canon Lake. Now, this is exactly what's happening with TSMC 3 nanometer. No, I'm just kidding. 3 nanometer is not nearly that bad, but clearly, you know, hey, they said we're shipping for volume production, and yet even in Q2, they're not saying revenue is happening until they said revenue only becomes significant in Q3, right? Which is interesting, right? You know, they started volume production in Q4 last year. That is a way longer lag than normal, right? Usually TSMC, you know, introduces a node in April or sometimes March, but usually in April. And they have, you know, billions of dollars of revenue by Q3. This time they've introduced the node in December. And now they're saying, and they'll have billions of dollars of revenue by, you know, Q3. So it's such a lag. And that's interesting. But clearly, right, you know, if they, you know, a lot of people were saying M3 MacBooks were going to come in WWDC or whatever the Apple event is in the first half of the year. That's impossible, right? They can't have the M3 because unless Apple does a paper launch, which they never do, right? So because there is no revenue for 3 nanometer wafers. Right. Otherwise, you know, how could they possibly ship a 3 nanometer M3 laptop if they don't have 3 nanometer, you know, wafers being shipped out? So right, that's clearly not the case. But you know, 3 nanometer will ramp, it'll ramp pretty fast. once it starts ramping, but the ramp is low. And then the other interesting thing is, yeah, M3 will eventually have, or whatever processor from Apple will eventually have 3 nanometer on the laptop side. But the iPhone, they're doing the split SoC strategy, right? They do the pro iPhones get the new processor and the not pro iPhones get the old processor. So that also makes the three nanometer ramp a little bit slower too. So in totality, right, even, you know, the number of wafers that 3 nanometer ships is significantly lower than, you know, 5 nanometer when they ramp that. Of course, the price is much higher, so they end up with more revenue. But, you know, it is interesting to see.
Is this something to worry about?
Yeah, this is the indication that TSMC is following the way of Intel in 2007. No, it's I think TSMC is fine. You know, with 3 nanometer, they'll be the best process node for at least a year. Maybe Samsung will get you know, their gate all around process figured out, or Intel 3 will start to pick up some pace in HPC. But, you know, really, I think TSMC's 3 nanometer will probably be the best process node until 2025. You know, 2024 is a clean runway for them to be the best process node and continue to ramp. The potential cracks start to happen in 2025, right? Where Intel, you know, again, Intel and Samsung, their claims are, you know, not so credible given their history of, you know, always missing. They always push back their process node timelines. But if either of them hit their roadmap, right, they are ahead of TSMC in 2025, right? With mm-hmm. with gate all around 2 nanometer, or 20A as Intel calls it, 18A. And Samsung is 2 nanometer. They have gate all around by the end of the year, 2 nanometer, and they'll be in volume production of 3 nanometer GAP. All those process nodes theoretically are better than TSMC's 3 nanometer. Now the question is, can they ramp them at volume? Will they actually hit their goals? All these things, because TSMC's 2 N2, right, is still, you know, looking like it's going to be in the latter half of the year for 2025. So there is a window where, you know, TSMC's lead is lost. But, you know, that requires these competitors to actually execute, which is not, you know, I'm going to be honest, right? That's not the default assumption for me.
I visited the fab, the N2 fab out in Baosan a couple weeks ago.
What the hell? Dude, oh. I want to go. I want to visit the fab. Like, both of us. By the way, I think both of us are coming into town for TSM for the SemiCon East. So we'll be there in September. I'm really
I'll
excited.
I actually am flying to Japan next week, but then I'm going to fly to Taiwan probably the week after that. Hey, so I'll be there for Computex as well.
Oh, wow. Oh,
hit me up.
I won't be there in September. So I would love to meet you in real life, John. But like, dude, when I mean, I want to pray at the fab. Like, dude, that's like, I feel like it's like a religious experience. Like, you have to like. We're going to be like wearing bunny suits. We'll be like looking down, being all very serious and like, oh, wow, ASML EUV machine, do our prayer and move on. That's how I feel about the fabs personally. And I'm really excited to go to Taiwan finally in person after years of wanting to go. So
yeah. Well, they'll never let you in, but like you go there and the N5 or Fab 18 is literally on a hill, and you can stand there and pray to it. It is beautiful.
You got in through, I presume, some PR contact or?
No. I meant like
he went to the shop, but he never never went inside the shell. No one gets to go inside the shell. Okay. Yeah, no. I know. We both perked up because we thought you went inside the shell. We're like. You went inside TSMC shell. We both would do almost anything to go inside. Personally,
me too.
I'm not joking. I'd pay $10,000.
Oh yeah, me too. Dude. I mean, it's worth like. Sorry, it's like we better see what people are gonna be dying for. Like the TSMC fabs are really, really, really important and truly historic. Like I don't know, some of the most special buildings in the world, in my opinion, and I'm really excited. I'm going to go see a lot of shells as well when I'm in Taiwan, but I'm just, yeah, that's awesome. I think I got to say, I am a little jealous of how close you are to where it all happens, John, because that's, you know, it's from TSMC, it's from Taiwan, and then the chips go around the world, right? Like, I think I did some math. I think it's about 60% global market share is just Taiwan in chips now in terms of value. Insane. Yeah, it's insane. Like, and I don't know what volume probably isn't as high because of all the analog stuff, but like, and 60%, I think, is being conservative. I think it might be closer to 70, it might be 65 in terms of value. And it's just, it's insane. It's really something special. Like, I don't think anyone has ever had such a chokehold on the industry like Taiwan has that. So yeah.
I got some other questions not related to earnings, but I just got some really weird stuff that people pick up, throw at me when they come visit me. And I want to hear your thoughts on it. We can still talk earnings if you want to.
Oh yeah. If it's about Taiwan, I feel TSMC, I feel like it's all part of it. If it is about TSMC, heck, let's do it. I feel like I want to talk about it. So
I mean,
I'm always
interested. If it's long enough, we could just pause here and then hey, questions with rapid fire questions with John, right? Like,
well, no. Let's just keep it going, man. We still have a good flow, man. Let's keep it going. What's the questions? Let's do the.
I heard on a podcast with Ben Thompson that he thinks that the TSMC Arizona fab is basically like a kind of like a copy exactly of certain lines. For me, something I don't really understand is who does the packaging for these TSMC American wafers when they're done. What do you guys have? You guys heard anything? What do you guys think?
So I mean, everyone does this concept called copy exact, right? Where you take your existing line and you copy exactly what's going on there, and you use that to build your new fab, right? It makes it much easier. You lower your risk. It's such a complex beast that you pretty much have to copy exactly what you already have and only set it up once, right? Otherwise, you're going to end up with a lot of issues. With that said, right? The packaging element of TSMC's Arizona fab is interesting, as is the mask element, right? If Taiwan was invaded, that fab is a paperweight, right? Just to be clear, there is within a year, one, all the wafers that would be outputted can't be packaged anywhere in the US, really. And then number two, right? Once, you know, within a year or so, the mask start to wear down, there's no way to rebuild those because that process is so proprietary and it's all done in one building in Taiwan. So both of those things make it so TSMC pretty much can that fab is a paperweight. And so, yeah, sorry.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So there's been conversations about having some kind of large packaging company in the United States, probably. Why am I forgetting who's the large?
Amcor?
Amcor. God, dude, I thought it was ASE, but I'm like, no, ASE isn't. Yeah. Amcor making some kind of packaging, large packaging that skews advanced packaging in the United States. So that's, I don't know, kind of a big deal. But clearly, that, by the way, that was a rumored announcement that was supposed to happen like 2 years ago. So we've yet to really hear anything about that. And so that's kind of like one of the glaring pitfalls of the whole problem, is that if you look at it, there's a lot of things that, you know, the paperweight fab, it takes a village. You can't just make, you know, you make the wafer, you cut it into dies, and that's just one part of the process to make it all the way to the end. It doesn't seem like that's, we don't have the full ecosystem set up for that. Any other questions? I'm going to try to rapid fire.
TSMC Arizona water situation. Have you guys heard anything about that?
So the water laws in Arizona are interesting, right? You can pull literally the entire contents of the river's water as long as you put it back in. And there are certain quality requirements that the water you put back in has to hit. But what that means is TSMC has first dibs to water before California, as long as they put it through a purification plant and put it back into the river. And if we look at Intel's claims and stuff they've put around sustainability and all that kind of stuff, they return like 99.9% of water to the river. So it's not an issue at all, right? With the water use. Now TSMC does not, their sort of sustainability stuff is not quite as advanced as Intel's was, by the virtue of, you know, probably I'm sure there's a lot of reasons related to political and geographic and stuff like that. Why Intel cares more about sustainability with their fabs, or cared more about it in the past with regards to water use and chemical reuse and all that kind of stuff. So TSMC doesn't do that quite as much, but they're rapidly doing that both in building that out in Taiwan and in Arizona. So they won't have a problem with water in Arizona, even though, Arizona's a desert. Yeah, but you got the Colorado River, and it's feeding, 25 million people in California, plus the most productive agricultural area in the U.S. So it's like the only reason there's a water shortage is because there's so much use.
It's also a good year. That's like a really lame answer, but it's like a really good year. Like right now, I think there's actually for the first time ever, essentially, people are getting water rights because of how like the water diversion rights, because of how much snow is in the Rockies and in like the Tahoe area. So like it pretty much in theory, these things will be a closed system. When they're done, they'll be able to return most of the water back. And we just need one really good year. And this is it, buddy. No, I'm just kidding. That's like a very bad conspiracy theory take. But realistically, I think that with enough sustainability initiatives, seems like it'll be not a problem. And like for real, this is a very good year. Like in a weird way, we haven't seen something like this in many years. So I guess we get to at least kick the can down the road for like three. So we'll see.
I got one more question. People talking about inflation. Dylan, you mentioned the inflationary environment. Here in Taiwan, inflation is pretty much normal, with the exception of energy. But with the exception of the energy situation, which they mentioned in the earnings report, do you see anything else kind of getting affected by the inflation issue?
I guess I'll answer that. Yeah, because I'm definitely the more econ. So I would say the biggest problem for TSMC's inflation is probably whenever they're making the Arizona fab, right? The cost of making a fab, it's the wafers, the people who work there, the tools, the energy, the water, all the inputs and chemicals, right? In Taiwan, clearly the biggest delta between last year and this year is energy, and we're seeing it globally. But energy itself doesn't seem like we seem to be past the peak energy shock globally. I think that where it's going to impact them is where they when they go elsewhere. I think Japan's inflation is ever so slightly ticking up. United States obviously is extremely high inflation environment. That is and so for example, when they're making the Arizona fab, one of the biggest problems is going to be, hey, how do we pay these employees and manage to have a cost competitive product to the ones we make in Taiwan? Realistically, what they're going to do, and like they've said this last quarter, is that they're going to raise the prices for the ones in Taiwan so that they can make ones that are, like essentially, let's just say the gross margin in Taiwan is 60% and the gross margin in Arizona is 30%. But Arizona is so small and then it averages out that it's, hey, our gross margin is still 55% or something like that. There's going to be some kind of math there that they're going to be charging the international set or like, the multinational fabulous companies. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think the real problem and where they're going to have all the, and like what really sucks is like, obviously TSMC is going to continue to build all the fabs in Taiwan, but compared to like the next 5 years, they're going to be building more fabs outside of Taiwan. All of those costs are going to be coming in with the inflation problem if it's in the US and at higher costs. So I think that's really where it impacts TSMC in the future. But the one thing that's really nice about TSMC is they are the king. And they're going to be, the process leaders at least until 2025 or early all through 2024, maybe until 2025. And when you're the king, you get to choose the prices that you charge, and they're going to be charging a lot of money. I think that's kind of like the how they're going to be thinking about it is like you get a premium product, you get to charge premium prices. So I'm really interested to see how that happens, because I remember a few years ago listening to these TSMC earnings calls, and they're like, the analysts every quarter are like, how can you maintain 49% gross margin? How can you maintain 49% gross margin? And they're like, we think we can do 49% plus. Now we walk all the way back. This is the first quarter where we've seen the first meaningful revenue decline, and they're doing 54% gross margins. And they're like, maybe next quarter it's like 53 or something like that. Their lowest quarter, possibly lowest quarter or second lowest quarter, is going to be a higher gross margin than some of their high quarters in the past. Clearly, like TSMC is just like crushing it. A 60% gross margin, which is what they saw the quarter before, is something that was truly outside of the realm of possibility of what we thought fabs could make. No one thought that was even possible. So I think that that's how they do it. They are going to deal with it on a revenue basis, raise prices, and everyone along the way is going to eat the prices no matter which geography they're from.
Oof. The other interesting thing to bring up is that TSMC is building more fabs outside, but none of those fabs are mega fab, right? Or a gigafab is gigafab, right? Yeah, 100,000 wafers a month, giga. None of those fabs are a giga. TSMC, Arizona is the biggest of them, but even that is, something like 40 or 50,000 wafers a month. Once all the parts of it are built out, Japan is not going to be, a massive, a leading edge fab, a giga fab, immediately. It might be over time, eventually on trailing edge. The European one, if they build that, maybe not. Nanjing is a giga fab, to be fair, but it's trailing edge. So TSMC is not building any gigafabs outside of Taiwan quite yet. But with that said, right, inflation in the spaces has hit, Intel as well. With regards to their Germany fab, right, they've said, hey, it's way more expensive now than we thought because power costs. They pointed out, right, U.S. power costs are pretty stable relative to the rest of the world, where Taiwan, they fluctuated way more because they import all their energy. Europe, they fluctuated way more because they import all their energy. So these other parts of the world, Japan, they fluctuated way more because they import all their energy, right? These countries don't have energy security, and so therefore their prices for power have soared a lot more in the last year. And so the inflationary environment has hit them worse in that regard. Whereas in the U.S., it's not been nearly as bad because a lot less energy is imported. That aspect is helpful, but in general, right, maybe not inflation, but just higher costs, right, of doing business in different locations because you're not familiar with it, or B, it just costs more, right? U.S. engineers make way more, U.S. technicians make way more than, and European engineers and technicians make way more than those in Taiwan. For better or for worse, that's what happens. And so that is, part of the cost. Construction costs are more expensive, right? TSMC's construction company, Dashi, there we go. They don't have that experience, right? And in the U.S. and instead, right, not just they don't have that experience, they're prefabricating parts of the fab and sending it on ships to the U.S., right? That's like a whole cost because they thought, hey, to do it in the U.S. would be a lot more difficult than just to do it here and then ship it over. But either way, that's going to be more expensive than their normal way of building a fab. So it's clearly, more expensive.
All right. That's it for the my quick questions. Thank you.
This ended up being a turbo episode, but I thought it was a pretty good one, if you ask me. Dylan, I don't have any parting thoughts. You want to just wrap it up here?
Yeah, thank you for joining us, John, and hopefully you had a fun time, and we definitely did have a good time, and thanks for joining Chip Chat on the Transistor Radio.
Yeah,
thank you.
Appreciate your content.
Come see me in Taiwan.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
So see you soon, man. Thanks for coming. That's it for today.